welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
It takes two to make a thing go right. It takes two to make it out of sight. It takes two to make a thing go right. It takes two to make it out of sight. Hit it. I want to rock right now. I'm Rabies and I came to get down. I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone. Lady Dumper, those adore me. It takes two to make a thing go right. Fucking A right. Ooh, I dropped the F one and we're not even 30 seconds in. We're getting fined. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is not the rock and roll DM. This is the hip hop DM. OG hip hop DJ Rob Bass. It takes two to make a thing go right. Anyway, welcome back, everyone. So why are we saying it takes two? Well, it's because we are returning again to our birthday game spectaculars. We are going to be going over, you guys have probably saw it on our socials, some of the pictures from my birthday game in a giant house in the Poconos. I think it was the setting for the Corleone compound from The Godfather. And we, our guests today, ran a gigantic game of 12 or 13 players and ran it between two completely different systems. And we're going to dive into that tonight and see what kind of actionable advice we can get for all of you. So we're going to throw it out to you guys. What are we, what's our first thoughts on today's episode?
It was an extremely ambitious project. We haven't tried anything that big since Chris's birthday game with 12 people a long time ago when we kept that one system.
Yeah.
They split the table, and managing that many players, and that many stories, and that many character personalities, it's a heavy lift. So it's very exciting how they executed it. We're going to get to all that and cover up. Maybe you can do something crazy like that yourselves.
Yeah, Tony, that was the tribute to the greatest game in the world that we did. Yeah. You can go back to that episode, yeah, for Chris's one.
Yeah, no, yeah, but I liked it a lot, too. I thought, obviously, it's a clever idea, the two DMs splitting the tables, the young people and the old people. We'll get into it more later. But I thought the cool idea was it was the one-shot, bring him coming back to Leland, and it sort of ended up wrapping up an arc. So I thought, like, on top of all of the cool mechanics and the way that it was managed, I thought the way that it went overall, where it sort of wrapped up that initial story where we had that sort of Call of Cthulhu game back. I forget exactly when it was. We had the first one there, and that it sort of wrapped up that story, which I thought was really cool as a way to do it, besides having to manage the two different tables, but to manage the story as well and kind of wrap it up really nice and neat. So I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, Chris, that made me think when you just said it. It's you had made the point following when we threw Tony's birthday game where we did the giant Secret Wars kind of simplified HeroClix thing, and you were like, two DMs, that is like that's the secret sauce for running a big massive thing, right? Because it really splits the workload. But let's get into this because we've kind of teased some of it. So we'll let our returning champions, because you guys will know both of them from many previous episodes, so introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. Obviously, you guys know me mostly from the Chaos Engine and Little One and such, Me Grows, all these things. So I ran Table B for this campaign, which had the newer people. Chris referred to them as the younger people, but newer people except for one person, which is Elizabeth's husband, John. He's very versed in it.
And then I'm Elizabeth. I've only been here once. I was the original Leland Call of Cthulhu GM last July, Chris. So you were just about a year.
The keeper of arcane lore.
Yes.
If you guys go back, it's the Hey There Cthulhu episode. So you can kind of see what happened with what we thought was a one shot. And now we're going to get into what happened. So I'm going to kind of throw it out to you two to start this out. Give us a high overview synopsis of what you were doing, the reasoning, the planning, how you decided to do it, and then we can kind of start delving into some of the stuff. But I know it's a lot, so try a little high overview thing to start with. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so easy. So obviously it was for Dave's birthday game.
Yay!
And we all in this podcast love Dave for various reasons.
God, I'm so great. Oh my God.
And
DJ Rob Bass.
It kind of morphed into what it actually became, because when Elizabeth and I sat down to talk about a game for you, I knew you wanted to do a potential night of games, and then I thought a weekend of games, and then, you know, we came up with this idea of running a DM game for you. Mm-hmm. And originally it had started of just bringing Call of Cthulhu back, but because of the size of the group, I kind of felt like, well, what if I ran half the table?
Because I think I was incorrect. I want to say it was a total of 9 players and then you two running the game.
Right? Yes, yeah, 9 players plus us running it. And yeah, and so for me, because I'm not a Call of Cthulhu specialist in any way, I've played a couple games.
Yeah, I'm not ready to just run a game in it. Yeah.
No, that I'm more versed in D&D. So, and I had Stranger Things, Eddie's last campaign to do. And I just use that as a morph to do the D&D for Table B, where we join together for a group thing in the beginning as part of Call of Cthulhu and introducing the characters. Then we split off. I did my thing. Elizabeth did her thing. And then we came back together at the end for the group to come together for the final battle, which was more D&D style than Call of Cthulhu, but it had Call of Cthulhu creatures and blah,
sure,
blah, blah.
Sure.
So, and then Elizabeth.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the thought that went into it, I feel like it actually, the idea came from the fact that Bonnie and I were talking about, she has all of these pre-made campaigns that we want to play. And Stranger Things was one of them. And then I love Cthulhu. I will always love Cthulhu. I think it might be the only thing I will ever run just because I love it so much. And so I've been kind of playing with this idea of chapter 2 of Leland, Texas, and what happened in the aftermath of them releasing Gatanothawa. And so there was a lot of like, oh, we have these pieces. How do we bring them together? And I think the two of us were very aware that to bring this entire group together at a table, not even like take the numbers out of it, right? Because like 9 people is a lot. It's not really that much bigger than stuff you guys have done in the past. Like even sure, our initial sure. Call of Cthulhu table was close to that. But really, I think what was the biggest kind of like hurdle that we had to get over was that we were blending 2 very different like levels of players. So Table A, which is a table that I ran, had all people who have been playing this for what, decades? You guys have been playing this, some of you, since you were teenagers, some version of a TTRPG, right? So even if Call of Cthulhu is new to you, you have some experience, you know how to jump into a new TTRPG. Versus Bonnie's table, Table B, was people that like maybe have played a game, two, maybe. And so that's, I think, what we were really trying to solve for, was how do we bring 2 very different skill level groups together? And so the starting and ending with Call of Cthulhu made it really easy because it's so narrative. You don't have to really do anything. You just have to role play. And then sending the newer table, the less experienced group, to do a very like prescribed module one shot gave them a lot of guardrails and safety nets so that they could have fun without knowing a lot. And then my table, you know, we could do all sorts of crazy stuff because you guys have the experience to just roll with things.
Issues, lots of issues.
I thought it was just the kids and the adults there, but that was a much more, that was a much deeper answer than that. Okay, very cool, very cool.
Well, in reality, it was because from the role play side, it was the kids. They were teenagers. So I had my table create teenagers that were part of Leland.
Let's a little do the setup here just really quickly, just and then I really want to delve into some of the pieces of this. But so you guys had set it up where the people who survived Leland last time have been scarred. Yeah, right. Which is not all, right? Chris had to develop a new character. John had to develop a new character. They were both dead. So
Chris's character did still kind of
he was
he made an appearance.
He was a statue in the back of Barry's hardware store. Yes. But so you guys set it up where this was a continuation of Leland, but the way in which you did it was we were coming back. It had been about a year, I believe, since the events of the previous time of the Hell House and the Angerstein House. And then the new players came in as high schoolers at Leland High or whatever exactly it's called.
Yep.
And they went missing. And so let's go a little into that first. Like, you guys split the table in a way that I thought was very organic. Like, it didn't feel it. You totally could tell, like, okay, here's your little letter that's about to split the table, because we were all aware that it was happening. But it was a way in which felt very Call of Cthulhu. It definitely felt very Stranger Things. So just a little bit into how you guys built that out to split off the table.
Well, I know for Elizabeth and I, it was very collaborative, first off. That was the most important thing about this whole thing. Like, we listened to each other's thoughts and ideas, like, because she's more the expert on Call of Cthulhu, and I'm, you know, someone who's versed but not an expert in any of it. But at the same time, we wanted to bridge that gap, which is why Chris's comment about the old versus young in gameplay made sense, because you guys are all adults who have dealt with, you know, COC a year prior, and to bring the new people in, as well as John's character, because John died, right? He was shot by Gary.
I shot him right in the fucking face.
Bringing them in.
We're over F-bombs, Dave.
We're plenty into the episode now. That first one I'm probably going to drop, though, because I don't want to get like a
I don't content care. I'm messing warning. With you.
Yeah. So
30 seconds, I think we have to wait. Yeah.
So bringing them in as teens made sense. And
that's actually a really kind of neat thing, because you guys literally made them young. Young people won't nearly know as much because they're younger, and like it's this meta playing on levels
thing. And it's teenagers. Which do you think they care necessarily about something, and absolutely would go into the potentially Angerstein house, right? Versus adults might be like, yeah, no, I'm good. I've heard stories about that house, right?
It also gave a hook for my table, narratively, right? Like, you're going to care more about kids than you're going to care about, like, just naturally, right? And, like, I did kind of railroad Chris and John a little bit, where I was like, hi, you need to be related. Like, figure out who you want to be. But, like, Chris needs to be John's dad, because I need that, like, narrative connection. I mean, it was great.
Talk about they did a great issues. Job.
Well, I'm just fine missing people.
I didn't have a really good, I had a general idea about the character, who was like the publisher of the writer who had died previously coming to look for him. And he had some shady past stuff and gambling stuff, but he had his kid with him. And I had a general idea. And as soon as the kid went missing, it was like all of a sudden I could just throw myself into that sort of thing there, which really kind of, it was, I didn't see it coming that he was going to separate from the table. I assumed he was going to stab me at some point or whatever. Like, I was going to keep my eye on John now, but it was, you know, or something. But it was very well done in that way that it, I didn't necessarily see it coming. I thought we were all going to kind of stay there. I sort of knew there was two tables, but I didn't think it was going to split in that specific kind of story based way. So,
So them being kids, like, also had a very like narrative intention there to build, especially because I knew my table, you guys, like, you like to be a little bit like you push back. Like, Tony was already coming in with like, I don't believe any of this shit that you're throwing at me. So I needed an emotional connection, to like motivate you to go and like solve the mystery. So that was also intentional narratively. Okay, sorry, Bonnie, go ahead.
Oh, you're fine. Which is why Mr. Z came a topic of thought for us on how to then bridge that gap as well, between how to get you guys to figure out that your teenagers, your children of the town, is creating and calling forth the god to come into the world. And so for you guys to stop the game that they are playing, that they think is a game.
Yeah, what I really thought that it was a cool way that you guys did it. So in essence, what they set up, which I was saying was a kind of a very organic, but you could see like, okay, we have to get this adventure going, was the kids, as they're in the high school, are receiving these mysterious letters that appear. And they literally were handing out organic letters. So, like, again, handouts in games are excellent, right? Because it just creates a whole level of immersion. And then the other players were wondering what the hell's on these things, right? They find these. We come to find out much later on, spoilers, that they've been invited to this quote-unquote D&D game in the old Angerstein house. That becomes actually part of the mystery that we need to solve. But they then get sucked literally through like a portal. So I think Tony probably loved that. But they got sucked through a portal into the Stranger Things world where Bonnie was playing the, and what we're talking about is that new starter set that they have for D&D, where it's the Eddie's last campaign, which I've been very interested in seeing what it was. Unfortunately, I wasn't at that table, so it was only secondhand. But anyway,
I will run it for you guys.
That was kind of the setup.
Now, something I want to kind of jump in at, other than the fact that I'm accused of being a lot of things, and adult is something that happens very often. But for this particular opening we did, I felt that what worked very well was Elizabeth's style is where you have individual scenes with characters for the buildup. And we had 9 players there, and you were able to navigate, get through, and do concise scenes. Everybody got a scene. Somebody contributed something meaningful to the story and to the ambiance, and we're able to move it around. Because my initial thought was, I sit down at the table, there's an Animus, and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I can't wait for combat to start. This is going to be absolutely nuts. So the split of the table was really fantastic. That's just for the Doctor over.
Yeah, Tony, I'll back that up in the sense that it kind of goes back to the first COC game that we did, the one shot in Leland, where we knew that Elizabeth does a very narrative style where it's very like, you know, focus camera on this character. And I was actually even blown away. Like, I didn't know if you guys worked it out, because Tony, everybody, had this wild scene where he's talking with was it his ranch hand? And like Dave. Elizabeth and yeah, Dave, yeah, Elizabeth and Tony are going back, and I'm like, what is happening? Like, I'm literally in, like, I'm watching like a drama play happen, and I was just kind of blown away with Tony. But yes, that was that kind of setup with that that kind of set everybody into the world.
Yeah, and I think to your point, it's like a movie style presentation, especially in the intros, mm-hmm. where you kind of get to see that. You don't have to, you know, you can disassociate yourself, but you kind of get to see it, and you get to see them in their own things as you're coming together. But, and kind of second, Tony, the thing that you didn't get to see his face at the table, like his face took on like a different look when he was talking as the ranch. Like, you had this look that you would just hit every time, like all angry. And to Dave's point,
yeah,
this is good. Like, you had like banging the cost of cows and all this other stuff. And I'm like, was you working on like screen? He's got like a script down there or something. It was really well done. But the face, I wish we could capture that, because it was like
nobody wants to see
an actor that can change their look. With like the face, like you boom, like you became the, I forget what his last name, but you know, you became, yeah, you became Marston every time you spoke, as if like you kind of got that like annoyed look to your face, which was, it was awesome. I think that's you know, sort of outside of what we're talking about, but that really that was really awesome. But back to that, the movie style presentation, is that like for Cthulhu, do you think that's more in the style of Cthulhu, or do you think that's more what you guys like, more the way that you like to play Cthulhu, so to speak?
So I think I can answer that first. I think this is it's a both and, right? Like, I think if you watch other Cthulhu live plays, you're going to see a lot more narrative. The TTRPG in and of itself is structured to be more narrative. It's not a combat heavy. I mean, we talked about this last year, right? If you go into combat in Cthulhu, you might die. Like, that is, it's not straight a combat tactical type TTRPG. Yeah. Right, the stairs. So I think in general, it lends itself and is created to be a little bit more investigative and narrative. However, I am and forever will be a narrative player. It's the reason that I love TTRPGs. I might be coming around a little bit because you all are forcing me to play strategy war games that maybe I like tactical things a little bit more. But from the get-go, and I think always will be, I love telling a story. I love telling my own story. I love incorporating everyone else's story. Like, that's just so fun to me. And I know you guys have talked in the past about like matching your GMing style to your table and adjusting. And I think I will just always be the GM who invites rich narrative and storytelling. And so, especially since we were starting in Leland and ending in Leland, I wanted that to feel, this was probably more a me choice necessarily than a Bonnie choice, but she was like totally on board and did an amazing job of like her side, because we like split it. I did my table's intros, she did her table's intros, and we just all did them together, and it was really magnificent. But I think that was something that I really kind of drove, because that's just who I am as a GM.
No, I think it's your unique style, and I think it works very nicely with it. That it provides a level of immersion in that with Cthulhu. I mean, truthfully, like the Cthulhu solo games, it's just basically you're reading through and making choices until you die at some point. Like you
watch out for that story
comes to an end and you start over at the beginning. So it does have that feel.
Yeah.
But so when you guys coordinated, like, obviously, did you work mainly at your table? Like, all right, we have the idea, we have Z, or did you coordinate, like, did there have to be coordination between the tables deeper than just the fact this is when we're going to split, and obviously Bonnie has to handle the D&D table, and you guys have to handle Cthulhu, but sort of that, because, I mean, it's a large undertaking to split mm-hmm. a table of nine, right? Just running a table of nine is difficult, so. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Bonnie, you can take that one.
I will just throw in there, though, Chris, that was a good point, because this it actually calls back to just our last episode when we started talking about the idea, is there even DM style? Is that a thing? Should it be a thing? Whatever. And that's a good point, is that Elizabeth just said, like, no matter what she's running or anything, there's always going to be a big focus on narrative. So it just gives that sense, it just adds to that discussion. So if you guys go back to last episode, it was a good one. So setting this up so you could run again, this was a one shot, so you have time, you have this amount of hours, you got to get it done. So
so from a high overview, we had a very clear thought of what we want to happen. Those high overviews was streamline as easy as possible, have as many surprises and cool things that can happen. And then on top of that, just ensuring that as we are identifying things that we want in our own separate tables, how do we reincorporate that as within the group for her to then, for Elizabeth's table, to hear things like Mr. Z. So her table knew you guys, this guy was questionable.
Immediately.
For my table, it was more, and I could have done a little bit more story with them about that, not only when they first came to my table, by having Mr. Z like be in the room once they finally made it to the game table, that this is this cool, hip teacher guy that, you know, they all love and they all like, you know, and that there's nothing sinister about it. So we just kind of made sure that.
Sorry, real quick. Did you literally have them start at the game table as their characters? I mean, don't go too bad. That's a bit of a sidebar, but I just.
Yeah. No. So they were the original Leland teens.
Yeah.
They role played to get into the basement of the Angerstein house.
Right.
And then they had to find where the table actually occurred. Then once they found it, which side note, my mom, her character, Roxy, just decided to go in by herself and the door shut, started to shut without them, right? And so then it was this whole like stranger thing about the table and this like artifacts around the table, choosing their seats.
Okay. I thought you literally had them start playing and then delve in. And I was like, wow, that's super meta.
No, when I had given them their secret bag and they came out with their shirts on, that's when they were those characters, Stranger Things. So yeah, so back to the original question. It was more respecting each other's thoughts while collaborating, while enhancing, slightly modifying to make sure it's working for both tables for the whole concept. So, you know, it really was a collaborative effort with both of our opinions.
But if I'm not mistaken, you guys kind of broke it into acts, in essence, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Elizabeth, you want to talk about the time?
Yeah, we did that for time management. And I think going just to add on to what Bonnie was saying, this feels obvious to say, but I think sometimes it can be missed in a one shot. We were telling a complete story. Mm-hmm. So, right. So like we had a starting point and we had an ending, and in a very Call of Cthulhu-esque way, even though we were setting you guys up for a good ending this time, because, and I know we'll get into this, we ended in D&D, and D&D tends to invite more of the like hero, everyone wins kind of thing, right? So we were setting everyone up to actually win this time, whereas last year I really hoped you guys lost, and you did, and it was fabulous. We also still wrote a bad ending. Like, we had a contingency plan for if the party started dying, and it was very in line with Call of Cthulhu, right? Like, so we had a story, and that I think gave us a lot of, that was our like anchor as we're collaborating, right? Like, she and I are not telling different stories. We're telling the same story just in different places. And so I think that that made it a lot easier to collaborate, right? Because like our goal is the same, right? And so how we get there, what our own creative ideas are, you know, and I mean, we're friends anyway, we work together very well. So like, it was less of the like, oh, I don't like that. And it was more of like, oh my gosh, that's a crazy idea, I love it, how do we make it work kind of thing. But it was more of like, I think our anchor point was like, well, we have the story we're telling, and that helps to shape it. So that made it a lot easier.
And so then we did the acts. So right. Elizabeth was like, we're going to have like scene one, scene two, scene three, scene four. And that was more important, especially one through three for Elizabeth's side, because we scheduled an hour. And then we would collaborate with each other as to where is the, you know, we're close to the end of the hour. Where are you at? Are you close to wrapping up what that would look like? So for me, scene one, 30 minutes, you know, or an hour was all of us telling the stories and the narratives, right? Scene two was for your guys' table, which I wasn't a part of, but going through the storyline of how to find where the kids are, so to speak.
Right.
For my table, scene two was getting them to the game table in the Angerstein house, and then teleporting into one of the Eddie's campaigns for them to then run D&D style campaign up until scene four. So I, as you all know, behind the screen, if one of us needs extra time or more time, or, you know, that's extra time, sorry, or less time. If we need less time, we just cut monsters. We make the scene work. You know what I mean? If we need more time, we stretch it out. So we would just kind of check in with each other. Sometimes we took a little different bio break, which made sense with my party switching into their shirts. You know, so we did have these set things. Unfortunately, scene four, we planned an hour for all of them. Scene four took a little longer.
Once you have a giant finale battle, it's going to happen, right?
But it was really important. Oh, sorry. I'll just add this, Chris, before. It was really the time management was actually, I think, more important for my table, because Bonnie did have a much more set game she was running. I was running a mystery. And I imagine people, you know, those of you who have DM'd or GM'd games where you're trying to solve something, the chances of it just going off rails are really high. Right. Because like, you know, you guys had a code. I gave you a code. You had to like do math. And like there are things that can really like get your players stuck. And so I needed the time, I think, a little bit more than Bonnie, you did necessarily, because I needed to make sure that we were matching for the most part Bonnie's table so that we could come together. So like my scene three was very structured. You guys didn't know this, but it was very timed and structured, because I had to get you to the Angerstein house with 30 minutes to spare in my scene three hour so that you could do your combat, get into the world, and Bonnie's table wasn't waiting for 45 minutes for us to all come together, right? So
and it didn't. And it didn't. It didn't seem like either table was waiting that long for any of the time. No. So.
And I think it's that it's like the clearly it's like if you're running a one shot like that, you have the, we always talk about you have so much time. It's the clearly defined goals. It's this is like I have to get to here, and this is where we know we're at the split. I think that's a cool idea of how you organize it, and it's how we do a lot. Even when we were doing the Secret Wars game, there were certain like we had. You came up with parameters so that it's easier to know that. Oh my God, it's like getting to be 11 o'clock, like, you know, or something like that. You can start to measure it because you understand it's not a continuing, like, we may never do this again. So you have to find those clearly defined story points and things so that you can shrink it or extend it to make it work that way. So that's very well organized to use the story points as ways to break the thing.
No, it was really good that I felt that during the gameplay, we had, it was much less of a mechanical barrier with Call of Cthulhu. So we could discover these plot points, we could discover the story points, and Bonnie said to me, she's like, at what point did you suspect Mr. Z? And I'm like, well, immediately. Like, he was obviously right out there, like, hey, I'm suspicious.
Because he was that I'm so cool douche teacher. Like, he was that guy, I'm like, this guy is, he's the guy, immediately.
But in a one shot like this, when you have 9 players and 4 acts, that's what you got to do. You couldn't do this deep. Why didn't you pull out the drawer and look under the drawer and find the matchbook that was taped to the drawer and solve the code? But also in that time, all right, so we found the hourglass a success. Everybody likes the hourglass. That works very well. Timing that, keeping that concise, especially if you have 2 teams running simultaneously and have to meet up. Something I want to touch on, the use of props once again, like in the previous Call of Cthulhu game. Where do you get these wonderful toys? I don't know. You have all these books you're showing us with clues that are relevant to the game. It all worked really well, but it allowed us to explore the mystery without going in the wrong direction, getting lost in something completely ridiculous and never finding our home.
Tony, I wanted to make that point as well, because while the mystery side was very, it's this to this to this to this in a way, it did not feel like that during the game. Like, it literally felt, as opposed to the first one shot, it felt much more like we were actively solving what was happening at the table, right? And we were given freedom to do whatever. Like, Chris's character literally just became an insane father who's running around town shooting his gun and everything randomly, like, but it still just worked into us, as, you know, solving, and it felt like we solved the mystery, as opposed to the mystery was kind of, well, you guys got it, so now move on.
No, there was a codex and a code and stuff like that, to everybody's point, and it's, you know, unless you've DM'd it and you've had to introduce a puzzle or a clue or a riddle, something like that, and you're like, oh, this is like thing, and then you bust it out and everybody's like, and you're like, oh God, and you have to start to think about ways to think it. Like, I think that it was masterfully done like that. I open up the book and then it's like that it was as difficult to and the quality of the things. It's funny, like with handouts, like for Lord of the Rings, I do, like, I print it out on the printer and I hand them a sheet of paper that has some of the thing on it, but the quality of the things definitely creates a different level of immersion when I get like a leather bound book, or the paper is like, it's like as if an old flyer or something like that. So there is something to the quality of the handouts you use as well, because that really added a level.
That was all. Yeah, Elizabeth.
I think that's also very, very in line with a lot of Call of Cthulhu games, is that they are generally pretty prop heavy. Like, a lot of people use a lot of props at the table just because it kind of adds to that whole vibe, that Lovecraft vibe.
It's a very theater of the mind TTRPG, right? So, like, I think especially, and this was always a thought for me from the moment I ran COC for you guys last year, I knew that you are a table that doesn't theater of the mind solely. You play D&D, you play with minis, you play, right? Like, you play with items. And so I also understood even last year, right, that to come into a brand new table that I didn't know and ask you to imagine everything probably would have been really hard and way less fun. And also, if you know me, I just go way over the top for everything. I mean, in some ways, this is how Dave's birthday game weekend even started, because Bonnie was like, what about this? And I was like, well, what about this 500 things more? And that's just what's fun for me. But going back to what you guys were saying about the mystery and, like, you know, the I just like want to make this point because I think it's important to what we're talking about. Last year, I gave you guys a lot more space to kind of wander, and you did. And the problem became that I had to cut a lot of stuff to get you to the ending, right? We talked about that. Some of that was like a lack of experience for me, a lack of knowing you guys as a table, the whole thing, right? But that was a different game. I didn't want you to know who the bad guy was because I kind of wanted you to fail because the failure point was so narratively cool, right? And so I didn't want you to easily figure it out versus this game had a very different goal. And the goal was that you were going to save these kids. And so you needed to know who the BBEG was from the first second, right? And Bonnie and I talked a lot about that, right? Like one of the things that narratively we wanted to focus on was that my table hated Mr. Z and her table loved him, because that was what, you know, we'll get into the final battle, but we were kind of setting up a PvP kind of crazy situation. And so that felt really important. And so no, I wasn't going to hide that from you. That was very intentional based on the story. And I feel like I could totally see how, like, long-term players would be like, what? She's showing her hand. But that actually was a very intentional choice.
No, I think that's a very Ed. I mean, making choices is what helps to drive a table, especially something like this, a one shot over the story arc.
Yeah, so we kind of have talked about it a little bit. So we started it out, it was a very narrative. We're introducing people back into Leland. We're in Call of Cthulhu. We have these kids. They go missing. The table splits. Bonnie's table is playing D&D. Our table is still playing Call of Cthulhu. We then find, finally, the letter, in essence, that was being given out to all of Bonnie's players in the beginning that then brought them to the Angerstein house. So we find this letter in Mr. Z's classroom, like in his desk, yada yada, and we get some information as to, like, oh, the Angerstein house is back, right? So we're immediately, it pulls us back, we got to go to the Angerstein house. When we get to the Angerstein house, and this my point here is what I'm getting at is what I'm going to call the psychology of the sheet. So in Call of Cthulhu, you're given a character sheet that means literally nothing. We could play Call of Cthulhu and never have a character sheet because Gary Sanchez, who runs a hardware store, he has certain skills. So Elizabeth, as the keeper, could easily run, without it being a lot of bandwidth, give me a spot hidden role, give me a listen role, give me a library use role, whatever, and know that they need to hit under 50, right? Under 40, under 30. Very easily. There's not a lot. So it just begs you to come up off the sheet and just be in the story. And what will my character actually do? Right? It's just very helpful in that way. And also in Call of Cthulhu, you have the buy-in that I'm going to go insane and I will at some point probably die if I haven't already gone insane. You come into the game knowing this and wanting that. And I make this point because Chris is a perfect example. He's like, I don't like to lose. I don't want to die in D&D. But in Call of Cthulhu, he's like, that was so awesome. I got turned into a stone statue.
Somebody shoot me.
Yeah, shoot me in the face. That was awesome, right? So the psychology of the sheet is completely different. And what was interesting to me, and I'll let you guys take this in terms of the final battle, our team got pulled into the portal. We raced through the portal. And we're turned into second level heroes of D&D, a paladin, a ranger, a sorcerer, whatever, what have you, right? But we are still, I'm still Gary Sanchez. I'm just now in armor and I'm wielding a sword. And it was interesting to me how much the psychology of the sheet changed, because at that point, when we were getting walloped, I literally look up and I go, you remember we're second level, right? because, and it was just a completely different, in the same game.
You're stunned, punk.
Yeah, a completely different psychology that happened immediately. And so I'll let you guys kind of build out the finale, but I really thought that that was very interesting in terms of, like, the player's psychology of how they're approaching the game.
Yeah. Well, so when you got pulled into the portal, I wanted it to be Stranger Thingy, environment. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why we did the little intro of how you guys would see each other and it'd be slightly weird and different. So table B, they saw you guys as whatever your second level D&D person was. They didn't recognize Gary because they were under a charm spell.
I will add in there, too, because on the big battle board, there was like the Stranger Things station wagon printed out. There was like an ATM machine. It was very like the upside down Vecna. Yeah, it was super like, oh, we're in Stranger Things.
That's because Bonnie has a 3D printer that likes to print things and takes time secretly to paint things.
If you guys zoom in on some of the pictures from the game, you might be able to see them. So
Some wonderful things there. So the most important thing that I wanted to convey within the final battle, which Elizabeth worked in to make sure she's conveying what she needed to, and she could talk about that into the final battle, was that we wanted, as Elizabeth said, to make sure these kids, my teens, protect Z, where you guys are trying to stop Z. And they would be confused by that because they're in charm. So they wouldn't know any of you guys as any of the people from Leland. You just look like weird people.
Yeah.
Like they looked when they went into the D&D battle for the campaign, where I described them as looking like a D&D character, you know, a sorcerer, a wizard, and, you know, a druid, all the characters that were there. And so they saw themselves in this other reality that you guys weren't a part of as looking different. So when you guys come in and you guys look different, I think that played very well, which is what we were trying to accomplish to create what Elizabeth was saying, where it might have been a player on player, you know.
It very much was set up in the very start where I was like, they've literally set us on a PvP. And like, I was like, I don't know, like, I'll go grab the salt from the kitchen and throw it on the table now if you want. But yeah, so it was very unsure. Again, the psychology of it was fascinating to experience.
I was going to say, I find that because Dave, you and I had talked about this a little bit and so I've been reflecting on that since we talked. I felt you probably more than anyone else at the table. I felt you like shift at the table into that, like, this is now unfair. What are you doing? This is not how we play D&D, which thinking about that is like such a fascinating psychology, because if I had pulled that shit in Call of Cthulhu, you would have rolled with it. You would have thought it was the greatest thing.
Like, so when we got to the old bookstore where all of the stuff was happening and Nicodemus had been the plant and all of this kind of stuff, we got to that bookstore and we were fighting off, in essence, Nihilarthotomp. Like trying to come into the world. And Gary literally just like rushes forward. When we got to the Angerstein Hound, I rushed forward to this avatar of this thing, realizing that I will undoubtedly go insane and I probably will die, but I'm doing what this person would do. And I did it gleefully. Right. And then it shifted once I had a sword and armor on. And it was
Yeah. And I felt that running it. And I think this was probably the part, this last scene, this final battle was genuinely the most homebrewed part of the whole campaign. So I knew going into it, and Bonnie, you and I talked a lot about this, that like this was the portion of the one shot that we were going to be doing a lot of in the moment adjusting. I was running Mr. Z as the elder god. I was running him, and I was running his like creepy little baby girl. Yeah, the baby.
Bonnie had 3D printed out what like a little child that was doing the backward bend exorcist thing.
From it was the exorcism,
It was horrifying.
Or the exorcist. So I was running him and then this other character, and then Bonnie was running all the, like, essentially the minions, right? I had three versions of Mr. Z that I was kind of going off of. One was weak, One was crazy strong, and the one that I like was kind of going off of was in the middle, because I didn't know how this was going to play. Yeah. With nine players.
He was
players,
the Super Saiyan version. That's who we were fighting, the Super Saiyan version.
You weren't, though. There was a harder version, Dave. There was a harder version. And so this was the space that I think we went into it, and we talked about this a lot. Like, we were like, okay, we're just going to go with it. Like, whatever happens, we'll adjust. We'll, you know, they don't have to know. But I do know from the way the table felt that, like, some of you felt us really hit you hard and then be like, maybe we shouldn't TPK them in a round, so I'm going to pull it back a little bit. You know, like, that was the section that I think was the most malleable of the whole game, because we knew that we were doing something super new, super, super new, between blending, you know, two tables, playing different game systems. The fact that I literally just, like, kind of homebrewed characters for you guys. I didn't know if they were really well balanced. I forgot to give you a cleric. That's on me. I did, honestly. Like, I did, right? I didn't balance that party well. There was a lot going on in there that...
With that said, though, like, that very much played into the general call, because it was a Call of Cthulhu adventure the entire time. In the end, it just happened to be pulled into, like, the Upside Down. So it totally still played. Like, we absolutely were not heroes in that way. So, like, it still played, but it was just fascinating to me in terms of the how quickly it shifted.
The psychological component that you mentioned, too, I made sure, like, my minions, I vastly pulled back on.
Oh, absolutely.
I did not bring as many
out.
I changed their speed.
I changed their hits.
Like, I literally, like, but was this exactly, the psychological
fear. You did component. Exactly what we've talked about, which is you are constantly, everything you throw on a table is always a prototype, no matter what. Unless you've run this same exact thing. Unless I've run Curse of Strahd for 15 different groups, I am always throwing a prototype type on the table. And what you guys did is exactly what we saw. Well, you turn the dial up, you turn the dial down, you're adjusting in real time. It's jazz. You're improving and you're figuring, like, okay, because for me, I thought all those minions seemed very much, they were just a tension dial. Shit's going bad, but we're fighting this elder god. Like, of course they're not going to drop a bunch of other, well, no, you were, but it was the dial that you could adjust in real time.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, that's all that was really, like, cinematically, it was extremely interesting. You have nine players now in a PvP situation. And we're talking about the psychology. I'm very much in the sheet. I look at my sheet. I'm like, this is the boundaries of what I could do before I start telling you crazy stuff. And the DM gives me that look, like, reel it back in.
Like, when you wanted to have kerosene in your truck, and she was like, you don't have any kerosene in your truck.
My character was a lunatic. He might have, but anyway, I don't want to go die. I don't want to be insane, because I want to live. That is the psychology of all of my characters, this preservation for themselves. So in this moment, right, my character comes into this dreamscape, this warped reality, the D&D world, right? I can't find my gun. My character's a gunslinger. But the psychology did change, because at that moment, magic, at least for everything that we've experienced in our two games, right? Someone performing, like, real magic, like Gary, because you were like, you're like a sorcerer, you're a druid in that world. In the real world, you could do dreams, you could see visions. Like, that's amazing, crazy stuff. All of a sudden, I'm a real druid. I can perform magic that you couldn't do on your wettest dream. Like, yeah. We're superheroes. And that changed. Now the condition of how we're going to solve problems, instead of we're going to think our way through problems, like, we're going to kick the shit out of these bad guys. Which was very fun. I'm down for that. Where it was still very Call of Cthulhu was the roles were merciless. Like, the people were trying to, like Chris is trying to talk his son off the ledge, and he's like, fail! I tried this pitch, fail! It was just relentless.
Also, can I just say, those roles were not hard. That was not the part that was supposed to be hard.
I just, I completely crapped out there at the end with the roles where it was.
The roles were not going.
It created tension there.
Yeah, it did. No.
It's the problem with different systems is you get used to like thinking like, ooh, that's an awesome roll. And then it's like, no, in this system, that sucks. Like I rolled 100. You epically fail. Like, wait, what? This is golf.
You blew your fingers off. Nice work.
Yeah, it's why I always like I hold like when we're playing like Warhammer and stuff, like I have separate dice because I don't want to confuse my D6s. Oh no, roll low now, but now roll high, but now roll, you know, no, you can't confuse them. They're like kids, you know. But anyway, so unfortunately, it is probably about that time now for some final thoughts on this really epic adventure where you guys jam together two completely different systems into one massive adventure. So I'll let you guys kind of do your final thoughts on it, and then we'll wrap it up.
I had so much fun building it, thinking about it, collaborating, bringing in three of the four players that don't play often, and having them feel like they have a voice, understanding, you know, the character, which they all role played very, very well. And
sometimes too well.
Sometimes too well. Yes.
I'm looking at you, Frank.
Working with Elizabeth to create this, you know, I would say epic game. It was a lot of fun. It was different. It was joining two styles that normally I don't think many people would think to do. It felt effortless. And at least for me, it felt like it was effortless. The only thing I would have changed is making sure my table B, understood a little bit more about the final battle in the beginning. So my players understood that they were protecting Mr. Z and they didn't know who you guys were. But I think there was some level of confusion as to why do I care? Why do I want to protect this person? You know, versus having a little bit more of a little bit story in the beginning to kind of get my players onto the same table that you guys were on for the last three rounds. Versus my table was broken off, different. Yeah.
It was, that's kind of like, because I literally could see, like, John's character was like, he didn't like Mr. Z. And it's like, cool, I need to make him want to like this guy. And I need to do it in 30 minutes. That's hard sometimes to hook the player into caring about the world in that way. So, yeah,
I think for me, this was, I mean, it was so much fun. When it comes to creating the one shots that are in my head, like I definitely need a deadline. So like I had been playing with this idea of like chapter two of Leland for months. And so I really appreciated the like invitation and the date scheduled to actually do the work and do it. And I think for me, TTRPGs are the most fun when you're doing weird shit with them. I will never be the person who like just wants to play a weekly D&D campaign. I love the creativity. I love the ability to do something new, to invite new experiences, to tell a different story. And so I was just really like the whole thing was so fun to me because like we did do something really new and different, at least in this group of friends. Like you guys haven't done anything like this. And Bonnie's like my favorite person in the world. So it was a lot of fun to hang out and like create something like this. I think like we just both very much think very similarly. So I will also say that if you are like co-DMing, fine, like you're gonna have a lot more fun if you're doing it with someone who like you like. That's stupid to say, but like if you like them and you guys real like
hot take everybody.
That's my
compatible personalities.
Right. And use Google Docs to organize thoughts and get things together for the in-betweens when you can't meet with each other face to face.
Oh, three wise DMs. I feel like we're sponsored by Google Docs.
But I think like just that there's something so enjoyable about like working with someone. You know, you can make something so much. You know, two heads are better than one. Like the creative juices get flowing. You like get to you know create something really fun and meaningful. So all around, I think it was a wild success for the fact that we like homebrewed a whole random game and had a lot of fun doing it.
I think what you're saying there, it's like a team up when possible. Like a lot of times it's being a DM, especially for a large table or a big thing like this, can be a huge undertaking, and it can force you to have to juggle things and not have a clear, you know, you're kind of having to have four hands. So I think if there's an opportunity, me and Dave did it. To Elizabeth's point, you have to have a synergy with the person. You have to understand how each other's styles work and have some collaboration beforehand, how you're going to, where the limits are on the table. But it does make it so much easier because there's a lot less stress at the table, because it's like you have, like, it's like the buddy system. Like, you know, I know if I get out in deep water, he can come and swim me back in the shore. And then the other thing is the clear goals. Like, I think you guys did a good job of it. And it's having very important, like, I need to hit these three story points, and for a session, I want it to be like this. I want this. My goal is I want it to be very narrative. I want it to have this kind of feel, a movie feel, those kind of things. When you define those things beforehand and you make convicted choices for them, I think it makes it easier to run it, because you know, well, I have to hit this point. So if I have to cut a little, if I have to extend a little, it makes it easier to hit those story points really nicely. So I think that was, you guys did a really good job of it. And it's good stuff, especially for one shots, is like, otherwise you'll be playing for like 8 hours trying to get through something, right? Like you hit a battle or something and things just go sideways. So having that is a really good tool.
So as a player in this campaign, I had a fully developed character already on deck for the previous game who played like a classic modern day cowboy, as how I envisioned him in game one. And I kind of alluded to Elizabeth a little bit about how I wanted to come out and play him in this game. And my answer was deep denial. Too many crazy things happened. There was visions, there was trauma, there was murder, there was betrayal, there was more murder. Then we buried a body and didn't talk about it, and then he was just nuts. I did research on my character. I knew what the price of cows was in that time frame, the price of land in that time frame. I was ready to hit the
ground. Throw himself into his work. That was all he did. He worked 80 hours a week.
Day Lewis of Call of Cthulhu players.
Yeah, no, I had the character who's obsessed with his craft, and that's how I handled the trauma and pushed on. As far as the actual game itself, the scene control was excellent. We got to use existing characters for at least half the table. You know, we split, but our half, we had nothing to really... We were doing like an encore performance. We had excellent props, figs. We each got our own figs. We got to mention that. They body made figs for us that were fantastic. I got a magic wand. I mean, I got a card with the split, like with the wand does. I mean, that was all... Talk about party favors. Like, that's really... Yeah. Like, next level kind of stuff. Really, and honestly, the entire game, looking at it from a bird's eye of like look, it had a really good mixture of mystery, adventure, action. It hit all the notes. So really, two thumbs way up.
Yeah, for me, what I really pulled from this, I mean, aside from what we talked about during the cast, but I'm not going to rehash that, but this really plays into something that's been happening now for quite some time that's been developing for me. I'm also going to do a callback to Matt Colville, too, because he talked about the idea, because the current zeitgeist has been very much, especially in things like D&D, has been very much, here's your adventure path, right? Or Pathfinder literally had like the adventure path. Here's Rise of the Rune Lords, and you can play from level 1 to level 20, and that's like super awesome, because it's that idea of this epic fantasy campaign where I take my person all the way up. But there is a level of the world can just become a little bit of a bubble where it's just these five characters that are going through the world. It's focused only on the Fellowship. And what else is happening? Like, what is actually happening in Rohan? What is happening in Mirkwood? We never actually know, right? So between this continued one-shot in Leland, which I always thought Call of Cthulhu was excellent at, what we've done with the Marvel face rip, constantly, like Tony's game, we literally built off existing one shots of Marvel and campaigns in our ever increasing Earth-61 shit universe, right? Like it has characters in it in the same way the Marvel universe does. So it's really informed that my next campaign is going to be much more of this modular continuing one shots that allow characters to come in, to come out, to build this world out that these other people are not NPCs. These other people, very much like the early days of D&D with like Gygax's campaign, all of those, you know, Mordenkainen and Melf and Tenser were all players at their table. They existed in the world in much more of a way than just that's the NPC over there. So I really think that's something to think about, looking at your campaign as this modular, I can build on it game to game to game, as opposed to necessarily this big epic arc. It turns into that, but I think it just it helps to open that bubble a little bit. So that's what I'm going to end with. And I am going to tease that's probably what I'm planning on doing on this fictional Star Wars campaign that I keep saying I'm going to run. That
he's threatening with a good time.
I don't know if it will ever happen because it just keeps getting pushed. But, you know, that's the plan anyway. So, guys, thank you very much for coming on again and talking about this. As you guys know, this is our wheelhouse. If you have birthday games to run, or you want to run something special, just go on the website, man, 3wisedms.com, and you will find all kinds of stuff about throwing the most epic birthday game ever. We do it all. We do it for 4 people. We'll do it for 9. We'll do it for 12. We'll do it with 3 DMs. We'll do it with 2 DMs. It don't matter. We'll go rent a house and do it, like, whatever.
We are DMs with issues, yes.
Yeah. But we are DMs with issues, and we are DMs with problems, and we like to help DMs with problems. And that is the main goal of the show here, and always has been and always will be. So if you have problems, issues, questions, something you want to hash out on the cast here, give us a holler. You can go to threewisedms.com and put it in the what's your problem field. You can reach out to us by email at threewisedms@gmail.com. You can also reach us at Facebook and Instagram. We are very active on both those sites. I know I used to tease you guys that we were going to get a Blue Sky account. I never did it, and I'm probably not going to now. So don't try to get us on Blue Sky. And if you do see us there, it's a Russian bot. So don't talk to them, because they'll probably just want your ATM card or something. And what I will say, I will do a callback to something I talked about in the episode, though, here as part of my final thoughts. Like I said, like, if I'm playing, like, let's say Axis and Allies, I want my D6s to roll really, really low, because 1s and 2s and 3s are really, really great. 5s and 6s are terrible no matter what I'm rolling. If I'm playing Warhammer, I need them to roll 6s literally every single time, and they don't, because the world hates me. So don't confuse your dice, guys. So for your different systems, get different dice. They're like children or pets. If you tell them to do something, they're going to do that. You can't say you can be on the couch now, you can't be on the couch this time. You got it. It's just that's how it is. So get different dice for different games. And you can go to our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You put in the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. You get 10% off your order. I will say, too, that Fizban's Fortune dice box that they've been putting out is crazy selling out. So if you guys want to go grab it now. But that's going to be it for us this episode. Again, to Bonnie and Elizabeth, thank you again for running the game.
Thanks, guys.
And thank you for coming on the cast and talking about it for an hour. So as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you liked what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com, or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, you know, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise Games.